The wonderful part about it is I knew that it was going to be uncomfortable. And when I met some of the hesitation, let's call it hesitation, not complete resistance, which that sounds so negative. It was just like, why do we need this? And then, you know, a couple of months in, realizing that these people were actually helpful to them.
Howdy there, my friend. You are listening to the Hot Mess Hotline, and this is Stephanie Grovins. You are in the right place if you are an ambitious leader who wants to pull off some big, massive transformational project at work. We teach you how to lead with innovation, flexibility, focus, and how to make really tough decisions, and so, so much more here on the Hot Mess Hotline. Whatever you're working on, we've got hard-earned lessons from executives to make you more adaptable and put into practice when this episode is over. Today's guest is my friend, Jessica Carroll. Jessica is a speaker on the topics of client engagement, team culture, and digital transformation. You may have seen her work in a lot of different places. She's contributed and been published in CIO Insight, BizTech Magazine, and was even named Computer World Premier 100 IT Leader. Plus, wait, there's more. She's a contributing author to the book Digital Transformation Demystified, in which she discussed client and employee engagement practices. Currently, as of this recording, Jessica is the Chief Experience Officer for Accuative, a global managed service provider. Let's get into this conversation where she's going to share a digital transformation project from way back in 2008 or so. We didn't call it digital transformation back then. That's part of what it was. And it transformed the business. And then in the latter half of the episode, we're going to talk about questions that you can use from that experience today as new technology, the new it thing, keeps rolling out into our businesses saying, you've got to have this, you've got to have this, you got to do digital transformation, you got to have AI, you got to have fill in the blank. What questions as a savvy IT leader and a savvy leader can you be asking as to whether or not your company does indeed need this new solution that's coming out? All right, let's go into this conversation.
Jessica, tell us about your hot mess, please.
I see that people without empathy are in a spot where it is impossible for them to drive both organizational or cultural change. So without empathy, you're going to get nowhere.
I love it. That's a hot take. All right. So how did you come to learn this lesson?
You know what's funny about this is, I mean, some people have empathy and some people don't. And it's not a criticism. It's, you know, we're all different people.
Yes.
And, you know, I always thought that this is going back years and years. I always thought that everyone thought the way I thought. How egotistical is that, right? I mean, or maybe it's just like total self-centered.
Yep.
And I came to learn, wow, the world is a whole lot more interesting than that. And people are much more interesting than that. Thank goodness, right? I mean, we don't need another thousand of me. But it did sort of draw me, you know, as I've gone through my career, to some conclusions around failures in organizations really overwhelmingly come down to communication and relationships. And communication to me is sort of a big broad brush where relationships sort of sits underneath that. So how you communicate is part of how you build a relationship or not build a relationship.
Yes.
And what I've seen is that in instances where individuals are just not naturally empathetic, or have no desire to be empathetic, they put obstacles in their way that they don't even see.
Mm.
And you've got to be able to understand the other person's point of view, even if you don't feel the same way, in order to provide that level of communication that's going to create the relationships to move things forward. So that's sort of where that statement comes from.
Mm. I love it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you had a situation in about 2008 where you saw the lack of visioning, the lack of empathy, relationship, communication that was holding back the company you worked for around that time. And you transformed it because of your vision, your relationship, your communication. Can you tell us about that? That hot mess?
That hot mess was where technology was sitting in our organization, and it was bifurcated times four, right?
Is there a quadrificated? Is that a word? I'm sure it's a word somewhere,
I think we need to make that word up.
Yes,
really happening. And in 2008, I mean, as I'm sure you and your listeners remember, was definitely a transformative time. Although we probably at that point didn't recognize how big and deep it was going to be. Right? We didn't
see it
coming really to that level. But there were a lot of forces happening in the world at that time. And certainly advent of true smartphone came along. Cloud was just starting to become a thing that meant something, even though people were like, what is this cloud thing? And there was just this sense of the individuals using technology were, their mindset was changing. And I think the smartphone did have a piece of that. But it was really around the fact that people were feeling like, why do I have to use these archaic tools that I'm using at work? I want something that isn't so hard to use. I want to use things that make my life easier, smartphone being an example. Mm-hmm. Cloud services starting to come along being an example where you just sign up and get a service, you know. All really revolutionary, in particular to those of us that were running IT and had been controlling technology since the advent of technology. Mm-hmm. And the control was there for a good reason, but the world was changing and we needed to change with it. And in my organization, the way we were structured, I could see that if we kept going on the path that we were going, where there were four different groups, all having a piece of technology, we would never have come together with a strategic technology vision that was going to suit the needs of our constituents going as we look forward, going forward. So my sense was, look, we need to come together as one unit and really not only share the same tools, create efficiencies through that, but also provide a vision of technology that suited the needs of the users as opposed to us telling them what to use. So it was really a flip in approach. And my leadership gave me the opportunity to pull all of them together. And then from there, we had some work to do to make that actually successful.
Yes. What I hear in that, in the approach that you presented to your company was, in many ways, like the beginning thoughts of design thinking, right? Which have been and are, but you know, the 2010s, I feel like was like the heyday of design thinking, which the first step is empathy for your customer. Mm-hmm. And so instead of saying, we are the IT gods and we will tell you what IT you will use, you're asking your colleagues to say, we need to step into the shoes of our business colleagues and say, what do you need? How do you need it? When do you need it? Why do you need it? The most important question. Yep. And at that time, I feel like too, technology and data was growing to the point where we could expect more integration of data, but it was still rather cumbersome. And so the expectations were starting to be there, but tech couldn't quite deliver it, if I remember that correctly.
I agree with you. I think we recognize that we can gain insights about what our customers really want, but I don't know that we were completely prepared to extract that. I'm not even sure we're all prepared to do that today. I know some organizations are great at it, but it is more than just a tool, and it requires humans and it requires AI and it requires all kinds of different elements beyond technology and the human. We need it all kind of combined. Again, I think it's out there happening, but I think we're not all quite there yet.
Yeah, I would agree. And we'll talk about lessons that we can use now, but where my brain is going with that situation, I think you're asking very forward-looking questions. It's like, you know, back in 2008 was the cloud will save the day. Innovation will save the day, which sounds just like digital transformation and AI today, but we'll get there. We'll hit on that in a second, right?
Right.
What was the process you used to bring your colleagues together to say, guys, we've got to be a unified front and we've got to put the business and the customer needs ahead of what we want or think we can deliver?
Yeah. You know, the team that I'd had from the beginning, they were kind of used to me. So I think they, you know, this was not shocking for them. They were pretty comfortable. We'd been customer forward from the beginning. And so they were prepared to some degree. The other units, as we brought them into the fold, you know, they really didn't want to do that. They had their own world and in natural human nature. You know, why are we making this change? And, you know, I was coming at them asking, particularly from some of the development teams who were used to, you know, sitting in their own space, doing their own thing, working their own hours and focused, you know, on the between them and the computer. That was their, you know, main focus.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking them to pick their head up and look outside of the cubicle and meet with people and ask people what they wanted without telling them what the solution was, which is tricky for an engineer. Well, and I say this so lovingly because I love
it. Oh, sure.
I really do. The way the linear way the brain works. Mind-blowing to me.
Well, I laugh because I married into a family of engineers. So that's, I was like, yes, totally, totally. But agreed completely. That linear thinking is magical. It's
magical.
Something the world needs, yes.
It is. And at the same time, it can cause obstacles for them that they may not even realize. And that's sort of where the empathy has to come in because, you know, you've got to get beyond the, I'm just thinking about this logically, unemotionally. But then when you're dealing with humans, they tend to have these things called emotions. So we've got to have a little bit of empathy to understand why one of your constituents might be asking for, you know, something in a certain way. And it may not make sense to an engineer, but it makes sense to the person. We got to find that middle ground. And the only way to do that is for the person that is trying to get to the solution to figure out, well, what is it that they're really after and why? And how can I help, you know, communicate to them in a way that we can both find the successful outcome?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So you got with your more introverted colleagues and said, I need you to go talk to people, ask them what they need and why. What else was part of that process?
Well, of course that was hard, right? That was, and it was unfair. I was asking them to do something they'd not never been pushed to do before, although they were great people. And I think they were all wonderful. And I knew that it would kind of work itself out, which it did in large part. You know, we brought in disciplines also that hadn't existed before to really help organize and structure how we were interacting with our constituents, like project management. I know that sounds like such an obvious thing. Why wouldn't you have project managers? But at the time we didn't. And this seemed also like a very strange concept to people that have been running development programming, you know, integration of infrastructure, whatever discipline you want to talk about, without having somebody directing them and trying to put them on timelines. You know, it was not necessarily the most natural thing to do. The wonderful part about it is I knew that it was going to be uncomfortable. And when I met some of the hesitation, let's call it hesitation, not complete resistance, which that sounds so negative. It was just like, why do we need this? And then, you know, a couple of months in, realizing that these people were actually helpful to them, you know, they lifted so much work and effort off of the teams that were the recipients of this new role that they were able to focus more on what they were great at, which was engineering solutions, as opposed to trying to organize, you know, product delivery. So it was a lot of little, you know, ads, perspectives, and kind of coming at it in a fearless way, thinking that, you know, I know people are going to think I'm crazy. My team thinks I'm crazy. What is she talking about? We've never done it this way before. But feeling so confident in the fact that I knew that we would get to the vision that I saw for the organization. I just needed to help everybody see it too. I felt that was completely on me to do. And I knew it was going to take a little bit of time to get there, which it did.
Yes. So just as you reframed resistance as hesitation, let's reframe crazy as visionary. I love what you did there, what you said around bringing in new disciplines, because I think sometimes as we're going through change, innovation, transformation, sometimes individuals get stuck on not being able to deliver a new result because they think I've failed somehow. I couldn't do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes it's a matter of, well, if you learned about this new discipline, then you could do it. That's a relatively easy fix. And that's way better than beating yourself up for being stupid. Or sometimes it's the organization's responsibility to bring in new disciplines to make the new results happen. And the more you can have those conversations about what's not working and what is, you can realize where the gap is. More often than not, the gap is not because someone is incompetent. Sometimes it is, but that should not be our go-to.
No, I agree. I really didn't feel that was the case. Like I said a few minutes ago, I thought these were great people.
Yes.
I really adored them all. I just knew we needed to be different.
Yes.
And different isn't always an easy place to get to.
That's right. That's right. So as a leader, how did you stay rooted in your confidence during this time?
Can I say I'm crazy again? Because it comes back to that.
Willing to experiment, maybe.
It's just a strange thing. And I don't know that I have a really great answer other than there have been moments and points in time in my career where I saw where we needed to go. And I felt so much conviction that that was the place to go that I was able to drive through the resistance that I met along the way. And that has carried with me through my career. Even today, you know, working with organizations and bringing in customer success to our enterprise customers. You know, when I come in as a customer success executive and I tell them, look, we're going to bring you value and we're going to work together and create relationships, it just doesn't sound really all that valuable, does it? You know, Mr. CIO is like, why am I wasting my time on this?
Yep.
But I am so confident that me and my team are going to bring the value. I just need to prove it and show it. And then we go about and do that and, you know, it all works itself out.
Yeah. And I'm breaking this down because I think people don't understand where vision and inspiration and confidence and kind of the sense of knowing comes from. And for some of us, it's more innate than others, but what did you do at the time to like find the space to say, this is the way forward, you know? And if it's a shower idea, which all the great ones come to, that's fine, right? But like, what were those moments you created to like have that clear-headed and kind of like clear sense of self to be like, this is where we gotta go?
Well, there's a couple pieces to this. Number one, I'm gonna start with the confidence piece. My mother would tell you that at 3, I had great confidence at 3. So
yes,
it might've always been there. And probably in some instances, I probably shouldn't have been, you know, me on stage singing, you know, nope, shouldn't have done that one. That was a mistake. And everyone probably knew that, but I was confident. And then I realized, nope, we won't do that again. But in many other places where I feel the confidence, you know, I'm always sure that I'm going to not fail. And by that, I'm not so arrogant to think that I don't fail. I know that at times I'm going to fail, but it's okay. I'm going to work around it because I have the vision and I'm going to get there.
Yes.
So where I think and how I think I need to get there doesn't work the first time, I'm going to find another way around. So that's sort of where the confidence sits in all of that. The second piece of the question is really around, well, how did you know to make that decision? And that was the path. And, you know, it's watching, it's reading, it's networking, it's being out in the environment, the world, the industry, and really paying attention.
Mm.
And so it's work to do that. You have to be aware. And I think for IT executives in particular, we get so mired down in the tactical day to day that we forget to lift our head up and take the time to see, you know, the headwinds around us. And you've got to pay attention to that. So in each of the cases where I really went after big change, and we're discussing just, you know, one of them right now, it was a combination of many elements of what was happening in the marketplace and what I heard people talking about, what I was reading about, and what I was seeing for myself as I was looking at the technologies as they were being kind of brought to life. So it was all of those things and just feeling comfortable that technology is always going to change. That's kind of the point. It's an innovative thing and it should change. That's really why we love it. when we get to that place where things that we used to do with technology are actually changing, we embrace it as opposed to say, it makes me uncomfortable. I don't want to move. So it's all of that kind of put that in a bucket, shake it up. And that's how we got to, you know, knowing how to make the next move.
Yes. And One last question about this hot mess in particular. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about how has Jessica continued to change the world based on what she learned about that situation and bring more empathy. But in those moments, as you're helping folks get over their hesitancy, their resistance, their thinking you're crazy, how did you demonstrate empathy? And what I mean by the how is like, what were some of the questions you asked, or how did you, you know, remind yourself to step into their shoes on a daily basis as they're confronting you with their frustration?
Oh, look, you know, I could not be more paranoid as a human being. So it's very easy for me to step into that one. And the perfect example of this is, you know, moving to cloud technologies. Because, you know, I had an amazing group of network administrators on the team. We had our own data center. Like, we had it all. And we had a great team, and we were doing fantastically well. Again, I knew it couldn't last. I knew cloud was going to be the answer for a bunch of a really simple one is, you know, we could never scale to the level with resources internally that we were going to need looking down the road, right? I knew that. And cloud offered a path. But flip side of that, if your job every day is to be a network administrator, and I'm telling you, we're going to move some of those functions outside of your purview to some other organization that you can't even touch.
Yep.
That's going to make you feel threatened.
Yes.
At least most humans. And I knew that was going to happen. And I had to trust in the fact that they needed to feel that I supported them and I felt that they were really valuable. And while maybe their job is going to change in the end, in a lot of ways for the better, but I needed to make sure I was giving them a pathway to learn new things so that they could really metamorphosize into the new role they needed to kind of fit into. And I think that's really important as a leader, right? If you've got good people and you know that you're going to change, I think this is going to apply to AI as well, which I know we're not talking about just yet today, but the lesson for me is very similar. Yes, things change. And yes, your job may change because of it. But if we can, you know, be comfortable and flexible and adaptable, and you've got leadership around you that is going to give you the space and time to help you do that, wow, that's powerful, because you just become better and better and more, you know, you gain more expertise and become more valuable yourself. That's a wonderful thing to give to an employee.
Yes. And how did you handle those employees who were unwilling, unable, uninterested in becoming or being flexible, adaptable, learning, growing, etc.?
Simply said, there were a few individuals that needed to exit, and that had to happen. Always a painful, horrible thing. You know, it doesn't feel nice.
Nope.
It doesn't feel nice for anyone that's involved. But at the end of the day, it was better for everyone, including them. And I know this is, you know, kind of a rote thing. People say, oh, you know, you're better off. In this case, I knew they were going to be, because they weren't embraced in the environment we were going to be. So it was just going to be miserable for them. Yep. Why have someone continue on in that? And it was the right decision to make. I did have one individual who left on his own. He didn't think he wanted to be a part of it. And I respect that. If you don't feel that this is for you, absolutely help this person get to their next place. I so support that. So that's where empathy is important, right? To be able to understand for the person who wants to leave, that you've got to be supportive of that. For the person who wasn't expecting to leave, but is being asked to leave, that you need to be supportive and recognize that they're not going to be too happy about it. It's going to be hurtful. How can you make this easier? I'm not so sure in 2008, I was as great as that at that part of it as I should have been, but I certainly try to think about it that way today.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, the longer you go in your career, the more practice you have at that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So awesome. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. How do we apply these questions to the hottest of the hottest buzzwords in technology? AI, digital transformation, all the things. All right. We'll be right back. All right, well, we take a quick break from this amazing conversation today. I want to share with you a new tool that I have for you. I think that there's a myth in our workplaces. Well, let me say this. I know there's a myth in our workplaces that meetings have to suck, and I don't believe that whatsoever. By all accounts, our time in meetings have doubled, if not more, since the start of the pandemic. And this time with your colleagues should not be a waste of time. It should be the most valuable. So if you're looking for more resources to lead meetings that are productive, powerful, impactful, and have everyone participating, get over to my website at stephaniecrevins.com/lead-kickass-meetings and get some new tools so that when you leave a meeting with your colleagues, you're not left going, what the actual F was that? You're going, yes, we're going to take on the world together. Let's get this done, because it was an unbelievably powerful meeting. Those tools are out there for you, my friends, and they're on my website today, stephaniecrevins.com/lead-kickass-meetings. Now, let's get back into that conversation. Let's dig back into this conversation, because we really wanted to frame this up for folks, you know, to help people think about what are the questions that IT leaders always, and frankly, any executive, right, in any function, need to be asking themselves when the hottest new thing comes along and it promises to disrupt, fill in the blank, or it promises to upend the business, or it's just going to be the thing of the future, right? But like what we're describing about AI, we don't know if that's 10 years away or 50 years away or 10 months away. How do you think about how to gauge all these technologies as they continue to roll out faster and faster and faster, and when to blend it into strategy and when not to, and you know, how to consider it?
I think you have to understand a couple things. One, the technology needs to be examined in the sense of what business problem is this going to solve? I mean, that's basic, you know, technology thinking. What problem is this going to solve? And then there becomes this whole discussion on, you know, value of solving the problem relative to return to the business, right? There's all of those elements that kind of get kind of put in there, and you've got to think about all of those. And yep. You know, leaders will absolutely do that. I think the one thing that gets forgotten is the people part.
Okay.
Because when we bring in change, there is impact on the people that are going to touch it, both to service it, but also to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to think ahead as to how that is going to affect, you know, whether it's the constituents that are receiving it or the people that have to deliver it. How is that going to affect them? And how do we help them see the value and purpose of this before we get to the end game? In other words, walking into a new strategic direction based on technology, okay, let's just generally say AI. If we're going to introduce it in some fashion in our business, we need to make sure that the internal team understands the purpose of us doing that and the important role that they play in making that happen. Mm-hmm. So my advice is always bring the team along for the ride. Have them be a part of the process in the right ways and places. Communicate and have some empathy about the fact that people are going to naturally question the value of making this change, the value of the tool, or the value of the change to the organization or business process, whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. So I think being clear on your purpose, making sure that the messaging is there, and having empathy that each one of us is going to receive that message a little bit differently. So we need to make sure that we care enough about our own employees in particular that we consider how that's going to impact them.
Yes. And for those listening in, right, when you think about the word empathy, oftentimes we think about it in like, I need to recognize, understand, maybe even feel a little bit other people's emotions. That is certainly a part of empathy. That's kind of like next level, you know, getting towards ninja level. What Jessica just described, where she said one of our decision points, one of the questions we have to ask and answer is thinking ahead to how people will be impacted, how they will interpret that impact, how they see value and purpose in what you're rolling out. That is empathy. Like, that is it. That is how you do appropriate workplace empathy, is to stop. And instead of saying, hey, my business colleagues in marketing, I'm responsible for rolling out multi-factor authentication and you have to do it because it's important and cybersecurity is scary. that's you as an IT professional. It's relatively, or it's a very simplistic version of that messaging, but that's your concerns as an IT professional. They do not care, nor can you continue to use the lever of fear to motivate people to engage in something over and over and over. They become numb to it. You have to put the messaging in their perspective, which is, hey, as an employee of our company, we hold a lot of your data, and you know, like your social security number and your birthday and your home address and your compensation numbers. And it's really important to our company that we protect that. And in order to do that, we're installing multi-factor authentication. And here is our role in it. And here's your role in keeping your data secure. That's how you put information in their shoes, so it makes sense to them why we're doing it, versus a command and control message of, well, the CIO said we had to do this MFA stuff because of cybersecurity, so I'm doing it, you got to do it too. No. No.
That is so well said. I love that example too, because that happens over and over again. And yes, and you just laid out two scenarios and ways of communicating the same message, but one's going to be effective and the other one's going to have a negative impact.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's all we have to do is think about, how will they receive this message? Mm-hmm. How will this email land in their inbox?
The other thing that I love that you put out there is the emotion piece of this. I mean, I actually don't believe emotion should be a number one factor in any of this that we've been discussing. It is about the business. And you know, it's funny, people often say, I want to make our customers happy. And I always say, no, I don't look to make my customers happy. I look to make them successful. And to make them successful, I need to understand what's important to them and where they're trying to go. And that requires a relationship and trust and caring and time and effort to take, you know, to understand what those priorities are. Yep. Once I know that, then we can turn to ourselves internally and find ways to make that a successful outcome. That's not happiness. That's business success for everyone, for both the customer and the person that is selling the services. So I tend to key on that. And so I love that you put empathy in the shoes of, it doesn't necessarily mean to feel an emotion that the other person feels. It's more around understanding what it means.
Yes. Yes. I love that point completely, because about the happiness and, you know, making our customers happy, because I say the same thing about our employees. I come in and I work with leaders, and I'll say it directly to an individual contributor too, is it is not your employer's job to make you happy, to motivate you, or to engage you. That is your job in your role. And if you're not getting that out of your role, it's your responsibility to speak up for yourself and ask to get your needs met. And you're right, I'd never thought about it from the customer success point, but same mm-hmm. as we can't make our employees happy, we can't make our customers happy. That's their, that's under their controllable umbrella. It's not under ours, but we can make them successful. We can solve their problems. We can give them a return on investment. Like we can do those things. We can deliver value. We cannot make them happy.
I agree. And happiness you can't measure anyway. And again, since we're talking about business,
yes,
success you can measure if you know what the target points are.
Yep.
And this is just, it's just, it, to me, that is just being successful as a partner to your customer.
Yes. Yes. Mm. And it doesn't mean you can't not care. We want you to care.
100%.
Yes.
I think, you know, to the way I describe it here, we've been in my current organization talking about this quite a bit this year, is, you know, curiosity and a willingness to, you know, educate yourself and have knowledge about your customer. Because when you do that, that caring is there naturally. So it's not like we're going out and saying to everyone, you need to be a more caring person. No. We need to be more curious, empathetic, yes, and seek knowledge. Again, getting back to, how are we going to get to the successful endpoint? And by doing all of that, your customer will feel your care. It just organically happens in that process.
Yes, absolutely. So what else What other key questions do you think our leaders need to be asking now as the next evolution of fill-in-the-blank technology continues to become popular, be asked to be inserted into our businesses, et cetera?
Yeah, I've been talking about this a lot lately. So anyone that knows me is going to be kind of rolling their eyes and be saying this again. But I really think it's having a mindset of embracing unpredictable scenarios. Mm-hmm. So embracing change. And being flexible and adaptable. And when we talk digital transformation, those terms are also, you know, thrown in there. But I mean, it's all over the place, right? But I really do believe it. I think if you are an adaptable person today, you're going to be fine as our industry changes, as AI comes into our lives, not just work, but in our personal lives. It's already here. Yep. Doing some of those things, right?
Yep.
So being adaptable and knowledgeable at the same time. I think AI is a great example where, look, there can be amazing things that happen with this. There can be really detrimental things that happen too. So we don't want to be naive about new technologies like AI. We don't want to be naive about it. But I think it's important to be adaptable and willing to understand and see, again, where does this fit to solve a problem that I need to solve? And how can I make sure that I'm minimizing risk in that situation? Mm-hmm. Those are the questions that I would ask.
Yeah, I think that makes great sense. And I think what I heard under that too, and this is my lens, you know, we know enough now about how technology evolves from, you know, the niche user out into the populace, you know, into becoming very popular across the globe. And we now have really great examples like email, like listservs, like social media, and being willing to say, what are the lessons that we can take from how email, social media intentionally and unintentionally evolved and apply that to AI? Because the same factors are at play in a different kind of technology.
They are, you know, email's funny because I remember, this is dates me, gosh, I hate when I do this to myself, but when we introduced email for the first time in our organization,
yep.
I had people saying, this is going to be really bad for us. We're not going to be, you know, going down the hallway and talking anymore. What happened to face-to-face communications? Think about that. That's kind of funny. And you know what? Some of it's true. Some of it was true because email was absolutely a way to open up the world and become more efficient. Equally, using email in a way that didn't have, I'm going to use this word again, empathy for the recipient. Think about how much yep. tone you read into an email that may or may not be there, right? So when we are communicating, writing an email as an example, you know, are we creating something that our reader is going to appreciate? Again, thinking about the impact on the other end. And yep. you know, we've been horrible at it in many cases. And I think that was one of the lessons that we had to learn early on with email, how to set the right tone. What is the etiquette behind using this tool? So yep. forward, what is the etiquette to AI? I think that might be a good thing to think about.
Yes, I agree. And the conversation that's happening less so this year, but definitely like 2020 to 2022 was the same thing with like Slack and IMing and Teams. Companies lacked etiquette around it and it just got uncontrollable and it became more noise, like email was noise. And same with texting, I would say, right? Like it was just, what's the fastest way to get someone's attention? Because I need instant gratification and I can't wait. And so I think a lot of that's normalized, but the same conversation will need to be had around AI.
I think so. And you know, it's funny with all the communication tools, you know, I do often, I will ask a person how they like to be communicated with. What is the best way for us to communicate? Yep. Do you like email? Do you like a phone call? Do you like IM? Do you like you tell me and I will work on your channel. And that makes us better communicators and better partners.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that's a very articulated, overt conversation I have with all of our clients and all of our people. And in part because, like, if I had my druthers and I didn't prioritize relationships with other people, my answers would be one word answers and my emails would have five words in them. And I know how that comes across. And I would not like to have that kind of relationship with people. And it's not because I'm uncaring or anything. It's like, no, this is how I use words. Like, why yeah. use 10 when you could use 3? And then I miscommunicate. And I'm like, oh,
listen, I'm the absolute opposite where yep. I probably write way too much, and I've been called, you know, wordy many, many times. I think I've gotten better. I've been smacked down about that a few times. So I think I'm better. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. But those are just human personality traits that we will see play out as change continues to speed up and come at us even faster and faster and faster. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you've given us a lot of great lessons today, a lot of strategic questions that we can ask about the future. The one that's kind of top of mind, and this will be my last one for you, let you get back to changing your part of the world there. You know, you're one of the big bosses, right? Like, you've got the C, the chief thing in your title, right? You're a big boss. You can make a lot of things happen. For the folks that report to our vice presidents, our directors, you know, some of those folks that oftentimes feel like they get stuck in the middle between the vision and executing it, what is your advice to them about where they're at today?
I'm going to try to do this in two parts. One is, you know, I've had times where I absolutely, yes, I was the boss. And then after that, I was just, you know, an individual contributor, and then maybe the boss again. And then I've been sort of in all of those spaces. And I would say that if you can lead, you don't necessarily need the title all the Mm-mm. time. And I think that there's a lot of power a person can have regardless of where they sit in the organization. If they are thinking about making decisions and pushing forward ideas with the best interests of the company and the customers at the core. So if you are really, truly putting those two elements of customer, company at the core of what it is you are pushing forward, and you are able to show that it is going to bring value in that in some way to those two groups, your message can be heard regardless of what level in the organization you sit. So I think that's kind of an important piece to it. I think that the other element of this, and I'm not quite sure this is answering your question, but I'm gonna go this direction. I think when you get in a position where you do have sort of a level, you're in a level in the organization that might be kind of a good mouthpiece. Let's just say it that way, because people feel they must listen because of where you sit in the organization. Mm-hmm. I think there's a level of responsibility that comes along with that. And that level of responsibility is understanding that every single person in the organization has to matter to you, whether they're your person or not. And so therefore, the goals of the company become your goals, and you must be the evangelist to help the rest of the organization find a path to help drive those goals. So for me, being in the spot and, you know, fortunate to be sitting there at the moment, I'm really focused on that right now. How can I help guide, mentor, support, be a sounding board for any person in this organization, regardless of where they sit, in order to help them help the company and help our customers? So that's really kind of how I would describe it. It's more about, I have been honored to be put in a spot where I can help drive that. It's now incumbent upon me to make sure I care about all of the employees to help drive that.
Yes, I agree that sense of responsibility, and I'm going to use the word caretaking, but it's really stewardship. That's what I mean. Stewardship of the company, its results, and its people that get the results.
I agree. And, you know, in part, that is what customer success is supposed to be about. But I think it's so much bigger than that. I think regardless of whether you're interested in customer success, you're a leader in the organization, you're an individual contributor, I actually think it doesn't matter what level you are. You can still be that shepherd and guide and help the organization. It's just, you know, having the desire and interest to do so. And the compassion to want to help people see it. Because for me, I do see the vision. I wouldn't have come to the company that I'm in right now if I hadn't. And it it always comes down to that. I want to work for organizations and work with people that have a purpose, and I want to be behind the purpose. And once you've got me there, I'm going to do anything I can to help everybody else see that purpose too. And I think that's important as a leader in an organization.
Yeah. Well, so well said. Thank you so much. Well, thank you for sharing your lessons, your insight, your visionariness. I'm not going to use the word craziness.
Or craziness.
Visionariness. It's been so inspiring to me. And I know folks listening in will pick up on your zeal as well. And I hope they take it with them. So thank you.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. What a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, my friend. I just love Jessica's energy, presence. I don't know about you, but I find her to be both calming and inspirational, right? She's just one of those people you interact with. You're like, she's got this. All right, she's got this covered. I want to share with you my lessons from this conversation, and wherever you're listening or watching in, would love to hear yours. And here are some of my top takeaways. You know, when we start changing the organization, our folks are going to get scared. It's kind of the nature of being a human being. It's kind of how it's part of the neuroscience of how our brains evolved actually when we were cavemen, which we can go into later if you're interested. But there's a fear element that does pop up. And one of the things as a leader we have to do as we're helping people move through this change, right? We don't want to drag them along. We don't want to pull them along. We want to guide them along is the first one is that I love this. We reframe resistance into hesitation, right? Some people dig their heels in because they just need more information. And we're always going to have folks that just dig their heels in to change. And that means that the future of that organization is not for them, and that's okay. But for those who are just hesitant, who need a bit more information, who need a bit more practice in the new way of doing things, give them the pathway to the new way of doing business in your organization. Show them the pathway. And you're going to have to do it multiple times. You're going to have to communicate it multiple times. That's just what humans need in order to be able to change. They need that messaging multiple times. You know, here are some key questions that you can use to evaluate whether or not this new piece of technology needs to be inside of your organization. First question, and I'm pulling this right from what Jessica said. Number one, what problem will this solve? Number two, what's the value of solving this problem related to our business, right? If it solves a problem and it's gonna cost $1 million to solve, but it's really only $1,000 a year problem, is it worth doing? Probably not. And then we have to think, how will our people be impacted and how will they react if we do change? Do they understand the value and purpose? And if not, how will we communicate that? Being proactive in, just as you would do a contingency plan or a continuity plan for when technology breaks, you need a communications plan for how your people are going to react and respond to the changes coming down the pike. And I have here in my notes, you know, I just love how she said, we've got to bring the team along for the ride, right? Like, we can't just say, here's what's changing tomorrow, get yourself on board or not. We have to bring them along for the ride and allow them time to get on the bus, if you will, right? Everyone loves the get the right people on the bus metaphor, but we have to give folks a bit of time, you know, and only you know for your business how much time you have to do that. We have to give them some time to allow them to engage and motivate themselves in the change. And don't forget the definition of empathy that we use today. It is simply having the ability to put yourself in other people's shoes, to think like they would think, so that you can proactively connect and communicate with them. I'm not asking you to feel all of their feelings. And in fact, like, if it's not your style to acknowledge other people's feelings, that might be step two for you in empathy. But if you can at least envision how they're going to think and act and respond and what questions they're gonna ask, that's what we need for empathy in the workplace. That really is the core skill right there. All right, my friend, let's get back to the most impactful work you have on your plate right now. Take these questions, take these lessons from Jessica and I's conversation, and I'll see you soon.